Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Christy.
Hey, Will.
How are you?
I'm so good. I'm still recovering from our big night out at the iHeart Radio Festival.
How much fun was that, though? Sue is still dancing to Lionel Richie.
Yeah, and my feet are still hurting me, but it's okay.
It is. Yeah, well, unfortunately, we were talking about this before. I have officially hit the age where the music is too loud.
I get that.
It was
I do
really
get that.
Loud.
It was because
great.
They have the most amazing stage setup I have ever seen.
It was incredible.
My heart was not playing around. Well, today we have an amazing guest for everyone who I'm a big fan of.
Me
all
too.
Of her.
I can't wait.
It's Candy Milo, everybody.
Candy's Yay. Here.
Hello, folky folks.
How are you?
I am so old.
Oh, please.
What? So old. I don't know. I feel like every day I just keep getting older.
I think that's probably accurate,
but that doesn't make you old.
You don't know that. Well, you just...
She does play granny. She does play granny, so I get that.
Oh my. I have to tell you guys honestly. So I have a daughter in her 30s that was like, I am so jealous that you are on this show with these kids. And I was like, just so you know, she loves you both. And I love you.
That's
because
very
she
sweet.
Watched you and I could get stuff done.
Yes. Girl, I know how that is. I have a 5 and a 3-year-old, so
yes.
I know how
wow.
that is. Thank
well,
you
I have a daughter in her 30s
friends.
Too, so it's no big deal. I get it. So
yeah, I do. I actually will tell you I am in awe of both of your talents. Immensely.
Wow. Well, we feel the same way about you.
Thank you.
Candy Milo's
here. I grew up
here.
On cartoons.
Are you kidding? That's all I grew up on. And watching right. your... So I obviously do a deep dive on whoever we have on the show. I didn't have to dive that deep with you, Candy, because I knew everything you'd done. It's,
yeah, it's wild.
The amount of your work is insane.
Thank you. You know, and I'll tell you honestly, life will take you where it takes you. My mom, who passed away last year at 96, so a great life, long life, she used to tell me, pick up your oars, you're in a canoe, and follow the flow. And it was one of those things when life didn't kind of take me where I thought I wanted to go. You know, she would always say, well, just follow the flow. You only use your oars to push against the rocks. And I thought it was really fascinating.
Wow.
And I remember going on this audition for Steven Spielberg for Tiny Toon Adventures. And I did not want to do it. I thought voiceover acting was where actors went to die. I was like, I don't want to do this. I wanted to be a singer. I had come off the first national tour of Dreamgirls. And I kept thinking, I'm going back into that someday. And then I realized I was trying to row against rather than just using my oars to push against the rocks. And that's how it really started, was Tiny Toon Adventures way back when you were babies.
Jeez.
You were tiny, tiny babies, alive at all. So
I watched Tiny Toon
Adventures. So I was the little bird.
Your very first animated series was with Steven Spielberg.
No, it gets better, Will. My very first audition. was for Steven Spielberg. And I was singing at a wake. And of course, as one does when they have no class, I started to do like a little stand-up. And it was a wake for an agent.
The wake?
Yes, it was a wake for an agent. It was the 80s. What can I say? So
I get that. Okay.
An agent for cartoons came up to me and said, you know, I think Aaron would want me to represent you. And that was how it began. And I didn't return her call. I wanted to be a singer so badly. But more specifically, I wanted to be a singer, backup singer for Herb Alpert. Who usually...
Do you know who it was?
What?
That came up to you? Who was it that came up
it
to
was
you?
It was my agent, at the time, Nina Nissenholtz at the William Morris Agency. And
wow.
She was
I
like,
still
I was
love
say,
that you were discovered at a wake.
Uh-huh. And for an agent.
By an agent who I guess was his assistant and now was going to be the real... And I just so you know, when I saw that it said voiceover in commercials, I tore it up. I was like, I am not doing this.
You're like, this is rude.
I know, right? I was like, I understand that you just heard me sing and thought, that's a voice for cartoons. I'm a little bit, anyway.
Yeah, I get that.
She called me because she looked me up in the, wait for it, white pages.
Yellow pages.
Right?
Yeah.
So she
exactly. Motivated yep. agent.
And I walked down. I had been living in a teeny tiny apartment in Beverly Hills. I walked down to William Morris. And she said, I'm just going to throw you in, which was a closet, because then it was reel-to-reel tape.
Of
and
course.
I auditioned for Dentine Gum, Perkins Restaurant, and this show called Tiny Toon Adventures. Steven Spielberg's Tiny Toon Adventures.
Wow.
And I got all three. And
whoa!
I just, and she said, you should do this. And like that sound was my heart breaking, knowing that this was... my flow.
The
this was going to be the river
the
I was going to be on. And
wow.
I don't know. I fell in love with the room. I fell in love with the vibe. And then you guys know, because you've done this type of work, you also sing in these sessions. You do.
Sure.
So
sure.
I was fine. I could do my stand-up and my singing. And, you know, I had big plans to be the next Bette Midler. But right now I'm just... the next cartoon person. So
I was going to say, the next June Foray
yes.
is not such a bad thing to be.
No, young man. No, it is not such a bad
thing. In the world.
Right.
Especially in this business of show that we, you know, carving out any type of a lasting a career is next to impossible, where it's you're working all the time and you're becoming a legend in your field. That's almost never happens
and
anymore.
And I will tell you, she was the most adorable, tiny, like teeny tiny. I'm little. I'm 5'2". I really could have like knocked the crap out of her. I could have, which I would never do. But I do say that
of course
so that you know. She was so little, and she appeared once or twice on the original Tiny Toon Adventures, and she worked until her 90s. And when we lost her, I had been toying around with the voice, and the folks at Warner Brothers, who have been very, very good, you know, I am back where I started, which was Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers,
yeah. And I will say, honestly, I'm not really good with the whole corporate thing. But Warner Brothers has been amazing. They're the least corporate. They've got Cartoon Network. They've got edgier stuff. And I am so pleased. A highlight, of course, you know, was Space Jam 2. Working with LeBron was kind of amazing. And we recorded during COVID. So where I'm sitting now with my really bad lighting... that is where...
You sound amazing, and you look good, though.
Thank you. I was like, I'm trying very hard. But I said, you know, I built this little thing myself. Like, this is a foam mattress pad from Bed Bath & Beyond.
That's smart, actually. I never thought about that as a tip for people.
Well, I had done a Comic-Con in Tupelo, Mississippi, and when it was all kind of happening in the beginning of March... And we said, you know, this is not your grandmother's flu, folks. This is going to be something different. So
this one's
everything online. I ordered everything online and just kind of over the next 2 weeks built it. And then I got the role of Granny in Space Jam 2, and we ended up recording, you know, over the next year off and on. You know, first mm-hmm. it was original dialogue, then I was doing it to picture, and we were tightening and changing some stuff. And it was all done in the world's smallest closet, where I am now. It was
wow.
wild. And they did it, Christy,
genius.
Over Zoom. We did it over...
That's what I'm hearing.
Like, Zoom, and we were getting real-time... Malcolm D. Lee was the director, who's hilarious and really, truly wonderful to work with. And a lot of the funniest stuff that I said was his ad-libs, which was just great. And I know that LeBron was on and watching... and so it's kind of...
So cool.
It was really amazing.
And did you get to work with friend of the show, Eric Bauza?
Stop your voices right now. I love that
yeah.
kid. That
Yeah.
He's next level.
Is a talentless hack.
That's a good one.
You hear it first here.
Right?
Eric Bauza is a talentless hack.
You know, Eric, no one likes you. Everybody's talking behind
no
your back.
No one likes Eric. He has no talent.
He has no talent. No personality.
He's the worst person ever.
I feel bad for his son.
I know.
It's
Ew.
Unbelievable.
Ew.
I know. He was our first guest ever. Because it was one of those things where it was, I've now worked with him on, I don't know, 20 cartoons. And usually, and I've always said the voiceover actors are the most talented actors I've ever worked with in this industry, bar none. There's no close second. Voiceover actors are oozing with talent. But you get used to that talent. You're with it all the
right.
time. You're in the booth
I'm
with
sure.
the same people all the time. And so you expect it. And every once in a while, somebody walks in that makes you once again go, you've got to be kidding me.
I feel that
and
way
that was
about
Bauza.
Eric. The yeah. first time I knew of him, and we would pass in the night, or I'd hear him doing silly things at like Nickelodeon, and then I was lucky enough to be with him on Puss in Boots, where
oh jeez, where
right.
he does the perfect. The,
oh,
I mean, it's
identical.
Perfect.
He's Antonio Banderas.
Perfect.
You can't tell the difference.
And,
yeah.
That was a room that was directed by Andrea Romano, who knows how to pick talent.
Oh, we've
you know she just
friend of the show and one of my closest friends ever.
I adore her, and she directed Tiny Toons. So we go
yeah.
we go
right.
way back to when I had a waist. It was good times. And
so Andrea was your first voiceover
yeah,
director.
Andrea was
mine too.
Wow.
Stop it. I just
no
think,
mine too. Batman Beyond,
yeah,
my
you know,
very first animated
and
series.
And we just
yep.
kind of got each other because. We are both anti the big room where they direct by committee, mm-hmm. and we're
sure.
just kind of we're just more indie folk. And I would say before Eric, it is now hard with Eric Bauza. Tress McNeil is possibly the most brilliant voice actress. If we have
yep.
to go gender,
I agree with you 100%.
Working,
I've
I
heard
mean,
you mention her, Will, many times.
I was just about to say that. I had the same feeling the first time I worked with Tress that you get when you work with Eric
yeah.
or Frank Welker or somebody like that where you just... It's next level. But I mean, I guess it's like that in anything when you're surrounded with talented people. There's always one or two that just are so much better than everyone else.
Right. And you know what I will tell you? Like Frank, that room that I walked into was like a third grade classroom. Everybody was voicing and doing these weird things. And then you'd say something and somebody would imitate your voice. And I thought, you know, much like my book, it was like, growing up in a house with sort of like developmentally disabled, I was like, the noise and the quietest two people in the room were Tress McNeil and Frank Welker. And
there
Tress was in the front. It was like a classroom. And I was way in the back. And next to me was Frank Welker, who showed me how to separate my pages and how to be quiet and when to laugh.
Yep.
And it was a great training ground. But to watch Tress and Frank... And then to see Eric, you get that feeling like there's a Bob Bergen in the room. You get
yeah.
this vibe that there's so much more that they can do, but they've sat in their canoe and let the current take them.
Yep.
And for me, I was
yep.
a single parent when my daughter was very young, and cartoons allowed me to bring her up and send her to college and do all that. And Am I super famous? No, except for like the 3 foot and under crowd. Am I, you know, super wealthy?
They're the best fans.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, like it's like I said, I feel like I'm like on a soap opera. You know, I got my crew and I got my people who watch my show, but I, for my initial shock of this is where I was going to be, I can now tell you there's no place that I would rather be, honestly. And that's not hyperbole.
I also, that's the other thing, the other thing that I love about our side of the industry is the if you know, you know factor. So you might not be a superstar in the world. Right. We might not be superstars in the world, but we are to each other because if you know, you know. And so Candy Milo, it's like they're, you know, iHeart calls us like, well, Candy's going to come on the show. We were like, you've got to be kidding me. So that, I mean, to us, you'll always be a rock star.
I just
And now with Comic Cons, we've seen since COVID, so many people were streaming animation, and investing themselves into all of the stuff that they could, the content and things that were very, you know, nostalgic for them.
Yes.
I'm sure they did Kim Possible and I'm sure they did Tiny Toons. Yes. Because I loved that show.
I know. And I have to tell you, I had only done a couple of episodes of Kim Possible only because you guys had it.
Hold on a second.
I know. You guys had it covered. Like when you have Nancy as your mole rat, you got it. Like, you've got it covered. She could do other things. But every once in a while, they needed me, and I would be able to go in. But as, we were all done separately.
What were you doing, Candy? Because I was not aware of this. So please inform me.
I did extra voices that Nancy couldn't pick up. I mean, another brilliant human being. But, like, if you had, off the top of my head, a stewardess, and then you add a random mom, I would come in and for your listeners and your people, your crowd that don't know, I was utility, I think on 3 or 4 Kim Possible episodes. And I'm thinking, was it Lisa Schaefer
that
was directing? Yeah.
It was Lisa.
Another one of my favorite girls.
She's one of the best people like ever in the history of awesomeness.
Yeah, just like a regular nice human being. But yeah. I find that the best voice directors are like Lisa in that when you're acting, they just let you go. If they feel like you're dialed in, they're not worried about every single line, every single beat. They're not looking to have you match something. You know, they just let you go
and let you play.
And I think one of the great things about Lisa is that she had to do shows one character at a time because that's the way it was scheduled so that they could get it. And she was so great at directing me in that here's without playing the other people or saying here's how they're probably going to read this line. This is what I'm trying to get. And so I could do line by line 5 times in a row. And then what was cut together was great. So it was never brain surgery when I worked with Lisa Schaefer. You know, and I say that just because that's how I felt about Malcolm D. Lee for Space Jam 2. It was never brain surgery. Let's just let you go. Give us 5 or 10 things and we'll let you know what works. And if not, we'll get another session and come back and pick it up. So,
Well, Candy, I have a couple questions, follow-up questions to that. So when you do utility, as we know, if we've mentioned before, sessions can basically contract you to do up to 3 characters?
Yes, you get 2 for the price of 1, and then a 3rd voice is a bump, a 4th voice is a new session. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, I had very little notoriety in a show called Fanboy and Chum Chum on Nickelodeon, and I made more money off of doing that show because I was so versatile, or, you know, nuts, if you want to say it. But versatile because I sing, and I think that's it. I know how to manipulate and control my voice that I could come on sometimes and do 6 or 7 characters along with Jeff Glenn Bennett. Oh, hi. Another brilliant guy. Like, we would just come in and we would say bat cleanup. We would come in and I had a character named Cheerleader. Cher.
Oh, please do all your characters.
Okay,
we'll be here all day.
She was a character on Fanboy and Chum Chum called Cher, and she was a cheerleader, like a cheerleader. And all she said was, hey, like Cher, and then they made her a triplet. And so it was like, hey, hey, hey. And it was three of them. And I was Lupe on that show where I had a poofies in my hair and I had like little braids like Princess Leah. And then, I mean, it was one of those things. And then I was Marcia, and somebody named Marcia who had braces, and it was a mean girl. And then there was like the Christmas special where all of those characters were in that episode. And
oh,
I
cool.
said, I think they never run it because they just don't want to pay me.
Oh, hi, friends. It's Hillary,
Joy,
and Sophia, and we are your drama queens.
We are going on tour, and we are so excited to announce that we will be live streaming our New York stop of the tour on October 20th at 5 p.m.
We have guests Barbara Allen Woods, Daphne Zuniga, Tyler Hilton, and Matt Barr.
That's right. If you live stream the show, you will get to see the guests from both New York City shows right in your own home.
Amazing.
It's amazing. So get your tickets now at dramaqueensoth.com.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Come, and we will see you on October 20th.
So, okay, I have a couple questions myself here. So, first of all, we're going to get into all the – we got to, of course, talk about Dexter and all the great things from there. But you mentioned briefly before your book. And
yes.
Your book is coming out on the 4th, correct?
Yes,
and just reading about – it's called Surviving the Odd. And just reading about this was so amazing. I mean, could you explain to us what it's about? Because it is incredible, and I want to know how much this influenced the voices that you ended up using in your career.
Yeah, I will give you like the quick and down and dirty. My dad was a very successful nightclub performer, singer, comic, depending on who the star was. He would do like a nightclub show. He was Bette Midler before there was Bette Midler, and he was extremely successful. But with the advent of TV, nightclubs were closing. So with five kids, he tried to figure out what he would do in the late 60s, and he wanted to give something back to society, which he decided should be my childhood. No problem. And he opened one of California's very first licensed halfway houses, board and care homes for the developmentally disabled and emotionally disturbed. And he had very little secondary education, I believe none. He was a comic, and he got who was left. And so 12 adults lived in a converted fraternity house on Frat Row by the San Jose State campus in San Jose, California. And we lived in the house with them. And then 2 years later, we had enough money to get the house next door. My dad cut a hole in the fence so he could get to work quicker. And they became my family. And over the 16 years that my dad ran this home, we cared for close to 350 adults with disabilities, mental disabilities, and nobody ever really got better. They just became, so I had a giant family. And what this did to my cartoon and my acting abilities is that I never judge a book by its cover. And I learned very, very, very early on to watch people very closely for safety, as well as oddity, as well as a fascinating life study. But when I get a character, I am now looking beyond the pale for the similarities to me, because you would never see, I mean, we had a reputation, Milo Arms, hi, the name of the house, hi, that was on the side of a van that I had to ride to school in when I was nine. I'm not damaged at all. It was like judging a book by its cover. You want to immediately dissociate yourself from anybody. I am not like that. I am quote unquote normal. I am fine. And I was the type of kid that said, wow, we both like the Archies. That's weird. Wow, we both like Abba's Abba's. That's weird. Wow, you love your mom and dad and I love my mom and dad. Wow, you take medication and I don't yet. So that's how I think it informed me was, and I learned later that was kind of a cool thing, you guys, that and rather than distancing myself, which I did in the beginning, I was nine years old, I started to look for the similarities. So when I see a way out there character, like a Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory, that has a laboratory in his basement that his parents don't know about, right? That I look at those similarities and what is he hiding and why does he consistently have to hide his genius? And what are the consequences that he does and where can he lose his temper and tell everybody that he is Dexter, boy genius? How could he tell everybody who he is? So I think that is how it did it. I like to tell people it is not, my book is not character funny. No one is being made fun of. That's the actual opposite. It's situational funny. It's putting a bunch of uneducated people in a home with developmental, and our family was a bunch of uneducated people, in a home with people who were struggling to belong to a family. Hmm. And we were the people teaching them how to tell a joke so that they didn't become a joke and function in society. And I think my dad did a really great thing. And he was it was kind of amazing. And I've watched, documentaries, and I've watched people that have home businesses, like you think they've got funeral parlors, and we've had series about this. And it really just was an odd family business. This is what we did. They went everywhere with us. We went everywhere with them. I think in my personal life, there's a little reason I live alone. I have been married, but now I'm alone, is that I, as a young kid, became the adult very quickly. And it's really hard to curb that when you're 8 or 9 years old and you're telling somebody, you will not do that, you will not say that, you will not wear that. You just become this little authoritative kid, and it's hard to break that.
Sure.
So that's the downside. But learning humility and compassion was definitely the upside.
Well, now with both you and your father, well, your father especially at the time, but you probably already showing the talent, both being performers, did you ever perform for the people that were in your home? I mean, were you performing for the people that were there?
When I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, I got the lead Dolly in Hello, Dolly. And my dad thought it was a great idea to bring 8 of our residents to the performance of Hello, Dolly, put them in the front row, and teach them the overture for Brigadoon. So when the overture started playing with the high school band, 90% off key, they started singing Brigadoon, Brigadoon, and it should be like, put on your Sunday clothes when you feel down. So, yeah, my dad was very funny, and I'm scarred. But that's neither here nor there. But I remember the director, who was also the theater teacher, saying, warning everybody that there were developmentally disabled adults in the front row and that they were there to have a good time and to put on the show anyway. And I'm like Homer Simpson fading into a hedge. I am going to kill my father. I am going to kill him. And I remember I walked out in the black and the lights came up and they gave me a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And I realized that they did that because I did something they would never be able to do, which was to stand on a stage and perform. And I think that was a golden lesson. But my dad was not a big supporter of the whole showbiz career. He came he came up very hard in the 40s and 50s. Sure. And women in show business, in his estimation, got there two ways. They married well or the other way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was like, no, no, no. And I was a bright and curious kid. I had skipped grades. He wanted me to go to law school. I did go to college. I did do pre-law, and I was pretty much out of there in a year and a half. And wow. I did get my degree as an adult and ended up getting a B.A., as an adult on the weekends. But I wish that he had been more supportive. In my book, there is a picture of him singing with me, which was one of the only times that he ever performed with me.
Really?
And we did have a piano, but we were not, when we lived in the home with them, it was a fraternity house. So we were in the den mother's unit, which was a 2-bedroom. Thing. So it was a 2-bedroom and an office, and for the time being it was our place. And while we would eat meals with them and watch TV, they were very much independent and their own people, and they did their own things. And then during the day we went to school and they went and did their thing, and then it would start all over again.
So
amazing.
Now if your father wasn't a huge proponent, which I totally understand, I have two kids and I don't particularly want them in the business, but if it happens, it happens kind of thing, you know, I won't stand in their way.
Right.
But how did you find, how did you get that technique if you were on a whole nother path?
Well, I will say that my parents wouldn't give me piano lessons, so I taught myself piano. I taught myself how to sing, and I got my first professional job at Marriott's Great America, singing in a theme park at 15, and then I performed when I was 16.
Do you remember what you sung?
Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Remember,
what did you sing at the theme park?
I am woman, hear me roar. The number's too big to ignore. Piano string breaks. I look at the piano player and tell her to stop playing and finish the song a cappella. And they were like, when will you be 16? And I was like, January. Okay, good. And then I was doing Broadway hits in the theme park, and I sang Annie in a bright red wig.
Wow.
And I sang, and I could tap. So I tapped this whole American, I'm like in a red, white, and blue outfit. And so it was the Broadway show in 1977, the summer of 77.
Wow.
And I was making minimum wage.
Wow, not
so this
bad.
Is, and this is, again, now, was your father actively trying to keep you away from the industry? Or was it like Christy said, where it's like, I'm not going to help, but I'm also not going to stand in your way?
Right. At this point, it was interesting. At this point, he was not saying don't, but he wasn't helping.
Gotcha.
And when I was struggling, because I was a big, huge belter, like a Broadway belter, and I kept losing my voice because my technique was wrong.
Yeah.
His way of helping me was to say, you're flat and you're not getting enough air. Okay, thanks. Thanks so much for identifying the problem that I'm aware of. But I did eventually pay for my own. And it was just something we didn't talk about. And then at the very end of his life, I had done a movie with Dick Clark and NBC called Reaching for the Stars.
Cool.
And it was the first docudrama. It was the first reality movie of the week. And he was very ill, and I remember telling him that I got this, and he said, "What do you mean you're going to play you? What do you mean? What have you ever done?" And I was like, "Well, I think that's what we're about to find out is what I can do." And I think that he just, you know, he never let go of nightclubs. I mean, he opened for Cab Calloway and Louis Armstrong, and he traveled with Louis Prima and Keeley Smith, and he
It's like another life.
It was a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
And he only stopped because nightclubs stopped.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. And
it was such a lifestyle, too, back in the day. I mean, the whole nightclub thing was just, I mean, from what I've read and know, obviously
I
wasn't there.
Oh, no, it was.
But, yeah.
It was hard drinking. It was late at night.
Yep.
It was gals. It was drinks. It was the Rat Pack. And
it's basically like rock stars. Like,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like being on the road and being a rock star.
That was it. And you know, what's my, am I on a plane? Am I on a train? Where am I going? How many nights? How many shows? How long of a show? Who's going to pay me? It really was. And it was all analog. There was no digital. There was like paper plane tickets. And when my mom did pass away last year, I found all of this. I found his calendar while he was in the USO, which used to be a branch of the service, by the way.
Yeah.
He was in the USO in Da Nang in Vietnam, and they had a schedule of when you did the officers' club and then you performed for the guys and then where you performed, because if you had a show and you weren't on Bob Hope's tour, you couldn't perform your show anywhere near. So he, when Bob Hope came in, they sent him out to the guys in the jungle. And so it was like a grind. You know, he had smoke for Sinatra. He was like, "I don't know why you had Joey Bishop. Why couldn't you hire another guy like me?" And I was like, "Probably your attitude, Dad. I'm just saying. Probably the fact that you're making hand gestures like you're a mobster." So I think that was really tough. But also in his papers, guys, was about 16 letters of commendation for his work with the disabled children and vets, that he always had this thing. And just so you know, his idea was that his home, Milo Arms Board and Care Home, was going to be for veterans.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't get any veterans.
That's still amazing, though. Okay, so the book is Surviving the Odd. It comes out on October 4th. And also, you're going to be doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble at the Grove. And the signing is the 15th. So everybody come out and see Candy. The story is absolutely incredible. But speaking of incredible stories, so...
Yes.
Did you... Now, I want to get into Dexter because obviously I'm a big fan.
Yes.
And how you came up with the voices and all that stuff. But I want to take it back a little bit farther, just very briefly, because we always like to know. Did you grow up watching cartoons? Were you a fan of animated series? And which ones were they?
Okay, so first of all, I was a huge fan of the Three Stooges, which is why I was a huge fan of Looney Tunes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's what Looney Tunes is for your fans who don't know. Watch on YouTube old Three Stooges, and you know it's got to be Three Stooges with Curly. I like Shemp. I loved Curly. I thought I was Curly.
I was a Curly fan too. Yeah.
Right. Who is Daffy Duck?
Yeah.
That's who Curly is.
Yeah.
And when Daffy gets mean, he's Shemp. Like it's the oddest. It's what I did. I also watched the Perils of Penelope Pit Stop, the Jay Ward cartoons, of which June Foray was also a huge part. So I did watch that. And then I wasn't really into, I liked Josie and the Pussycats. I didn't see myself in it. You know, I didn't, I watched Fat Albert. I watched the Jackson 5. But I really have, and I'm not even saying that because that's the brand. I'm telling you, I was a huge fan. And that's what I grew up on. That's what I find still funny today. And there is a Looney Tunes cartoon that we do on HBO Max that I think Alex Kerwin and Pete and everybody who's involved with that, they really have that old Looney Tunes 1940s sensibility. They're very fast and funny, but with cell phones. That's what I say. That's the difference with this new thing, is that we've added in some technology, but it's very much bam, 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 set up, joke, set up, sure. set up. It's great. Chrissy Kavanaugh is the original voice of Dexter from Dexter's Lab, and she completely quit voice acting, and they were shelving Dexter. They were going to get rid of it. She had done, I think, a year and a half, and then they had a year and a half of her in the can.
How do you quit voice acting? No offense to Chrissy, but I just wonder why a person...
I don't know.
And
she's no longer living, so I can't ask her. But she and I were good friends because we had the same on-camera agents. And we were both trying to get on sketch TV. That was our big deal, testing for Mad or In Living Color. And Roseanne Barr had a sketch show that she got on, and I was testing for Mad, and I was testing for In Living Color, and it just, I could never get it. And she just, I mean, she was Chucky, she was Babe, and I think she said, I've had enough. And so in my speaking voice, if I talk like this, and I had a little husk to my voice, and I had a little bit of an accent, this is what Chris Kavanaugh sounded like. So my agent at the time said, I want you to slate in Chrissy's speaking voice.
Oh, interesting.
And Genndy Tartakovsky picked me, and I ended up doing 8 years of it. And then the voice, the episodes that they had in the can that she did, I re-voiced those.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And then, so she is credited. We're both credited, but she's no longer living, so I get the residuals. But we go back and forth depending on who licenses it,
right?
Of whose voice it is, and whose voice it really is Genndy Tartakovsky. That is exactly, sounds like a French Russian guy. He sounds exactly like this. He would say, Genndy, I don't know how to tell you to go up on certain words, because Chrissy would go up. And I was like, Chrissy was nuts. She also had her own sense of humor. I have a different sense of humor. I have a Looney Tunes sense of humor.
Yes, you have a Stooges sense of humor.
I have a Stooge sense of humor. So when you hit the joke, I'm going to hammer it to let the kids at home know this is the joke. And Chrissy's method of joke telling was to go away from the joke.
Little
so
more
that
subtle.
Another character, yeah, so that it was in the animation. Do you know what I mean? So Dexter would say something like, Mandark, I'm going to get you. And then it would be closing on Mandark with blink, blink, with the piano key sound, blink, blink. And it was just different. But I did do, I think, 7 years of episodes. And It's been amazing. I mean,
Well, it's a phenomenal show. I mean, it's a well-written, well-acted, well-crafted animated series. I mean, it was a solid show.
I, for years, was saying to agents, because it behooved them, although the agent that handled me for Dexter handled Chrissy as well. I mean, so when Chrissy quit, they had her in me, and she was happy that I would be able to do it because we were friends. Our voiceover agent was the same person. But they used to say, when you go out on tour or if you go to cons, don't tell people you didn't create the voice.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I think I can imitate her. It eventually became me. But at the beginning, Genndy wanted
it.
Chrissy. Mm-hmm. That's who he wanted. He wanted
Did you
Chrissy
audition
Kavanaugh.
Originally as well?
No, because it was an art school thing, and he sent it, that's what it was. It went to, I believe, and forgive me, it could have started, you guys, at Hanna-Barbera, because Hanna-Barbera was bought by Time.
Yep.
Time was bought by Warner.
Yep.
Warner, blah, 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 blah. And then we've got Kids WB, Cartoon Network. It was all under the same umbrella. I believe it's also where Butch Hartman and Seth MacFarlane started.
Sure. Was and Andrea Romano.
That's
and
right.
Andrea Romano in the Hanna-Barbera stable. And I think it was a short. And I was doing other shorts there that got picked up. Another short, Kenny and the Chimp with Tom Kenny. I had done a bunch of shorts, Cow and Chicken. I was the mom
Cow
and the teacher on Cow and Chicken.
Liked that show.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was Chris Salter. Was Chris Zimmerman Salter, who was the voice director and also casting on that. And then I just kind of stayed in that family. So it was a cartoon or a Hanna-Barbera short. And I was not on that short. So I was like,
though.
I think like five other ones. And so was Chrissy. I was on Tutu the Superina. And a lot of these, they did not take from the animators. So they went over to Nickelodeon. And that's Fred. I can't think of his last name.
Tattershort?
Pardon me?
Is it Freddie Tattershort?
No, but I do love Freddie Tattershort. I'm thinking of the producer.
Okay.
He does Frederator Films. He took a lot of those shorts over to Nickelodeon, and that's how I did Chalk Zone, My Life as a Teenage Robot, Jimmy Neutron. Jeez. All of these shows that I was on were all originally shorts.
Shorts, sure.
Hey, it's Megan King from Intimate Knowledge. If you want to know what was really happening between me and Mike Johnson from Bachelor Nation in Vegas, listen right now to Intimate Knowledge and get all of the not safe for work details. Listen to Intimate Knowledge on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
So here's the thing. So Christy and I are, we haven't talked about it yet on this episode, but we don't talk about it much because we're still getting all our ducks in a row, but we are launching the super awesome contest to find the next voice actor. And
super awesome contest to find the next voice actor.
See,
I said it.
She said it. So we are going to, we can't get into all the prizes yet, but you win a voiceover agent for a year. You win some money. You get flown out. It's really amazing. So
that's amazing.
The thing that we love is what
big break.
Everybody learns from all the different voiceover actors that we have on the show is the kind of, you know, they're picking up different techniques, different tidbits from everybody here. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting about you when I was doing the deep dive is one of the things you spoke about a lot in a bunch of the different interviews I watched. And it's something that I don't think is talked about enough and I think could so benefit some of the amateur actors out there is your prep time before you start a job, and you prep the same way you prepped to sing.
Right.
So I was curious if you could kind of walk us through how you prep your voice to get ready to do some of these longer sessions or more grueling sessions or or what can the amateur actor do? Because the last thing you want to do, as you were saying when you were singing and you were losing your voice as you're singing, you don't want to destroy your instrument. So how do you prep before you get started?
There are, and for those of you that are, you know, financially challenged, you can do this on YouTube. But I have a set, I have two sets of warm-ups. They're 12 minutes each. Mine are from a vocal teacher in LA, Bob Garrett. But he offers, he's also on Instagram. He does things called vocal gyms. I do a 12-minute warm-up starting with humming, just low hums, but I don't hum a scale. I stay on one note to hear where the cracks are. So it's just a hmm, and then I'll go up half steps or just hmm until I get to the top, and then I'll go back down. Then I do lip trills, up and down to a scale. And then I warm up three sets of my instrument, which is the belt, the mid, or the passaggio, which is really in your mask, which is your face. Think of yourself wearing a mask. It's up there. And then I do my high voice. I will do this every single day. And I did it before I talked to you.
Really?
I did it just because I knew we were going to talk. And I'd be excited.
Ooh.
So like I'd scream or I'd do something guttural and I'd be shot. You know? And it that's all it takes, especially someone who has a little age on their voice. You have to do it. Then I do my gig. And one of the things that warming up will do is that they'll take all screams and everything out of your throat and put it in your mask. There is a way for you to scream nasally and not scream gutturally. I will do my gig and then I get in the car. And I have a warm down, especially if I'm doing something like when I did Maya and Miguel, and she was really high like this. It was so freaking hard that by the end of the session, my larynx was up by my ears. So I cool down, which is none of the hard, belty things. I do the lip trills and the humming from the top, only going down. And I usually do that in the car going home. So it's like, lower, lower. And I do that three or four times. And then it is the hums, starting high, going all the way down to the bottom. And it releases your larynx, releases your shoulders. But if you don't cool down, your larynx stays up there and it exhausts it. It just exhausts.
So true. So I went to Joan Lader, who really was helping me. I was Belle on Broadway in
Yes, you were.
I had had double nodule removal prior to booking the job, and in 2 months' time, I was on Broadway, and so that actually it was maybe like more 3 or 4 months, but after you know. That was not the case. Usually you're supposed to take a year after getting nodular surgery. And I was, you know, 19 and desperate to get in there. So Disney was like, okay, whatever works. And sort of they kind of didn't look. They looked the other way so that I could get
as
on
as long as
the
you're
stage.
Saying it's okay.
And so it was very hard to maintain my integrity of my instrument. So when I went to this woman, Joan Lader, who's, I'd say, one of the premier you know, voice coaches for Broadway performers and singers. And so she did exactly the same thing. She would tell me the warm up and then the cool down, which I had never heard of before. And and it is so vital, I think, for the investment of the longevity of your voice.
And I'm unashamed to say, Christy, I will say it. I'm 61 and I probably have another 30 years, definitely voice acting. What tends to slow down is breathing. Like it gets, as you get older, it's harder and harder to take a 26-year-old breath and sure. do, you know.
That makes
but
sense. That makes sense.
I credit this, Christy, I credit to the warm down.
Yeah.
My longevity is the warm down.
Yeah.
And I Absolutely. Would say to everybody listening, if you don't have 12 minutes or you've forgotten and you're walking in, hum and lip trill and then hum and lip trill on your way out. Mm-hmm. But you can't go in shouting cold. Mm-mm. You will double nodule. That's what I got at 16 was a double nodule. And the only way, which would make it 1977, that they could take those off was scraping them off
yeah.
and praying that you didn't scab.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So
it didn't get that much easier, too. I think that's about, they lasered really? Them or something. Yeah, I think they lasered open throat surgery.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, I think it's really important to, you know, to avoid it. It's why we take vitamins. It's why we walk and we keep mobile. Mm-hmm. It's all about avoidance of injury.
Preventative,
and so if you can take 2 minutes, I would also say for your listeners as a last thing, which even many professional voice actors do not do,
yes.
and that is read and mark your script yeah. before you walk in the room. I cannot tell you
Guilty.
How many people that I've gone that really believe that they can wing it. And
Guilty.
All I can tell you now to my fellow Faboos is that the business is wide open now.
Yeah.
And
I'm
you
a
don't have to.
I'm a prep guy. I'm always reading my lines. I'm marking it up.
I didn't know that.
I'm
you did that with Ron. Oh. You did that a lot?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I never, yeah. I never ever walked into a session cold.
That shows. It honestly shows.
It really does. It makes you an actor. Mm-hmm. It makes you a voice actor rather than relying on silly voices. I have a couple of friends whom I adore, who are brilliant, who are like, I didn't have time. I'm going to wing it. And I'm like, you know, this is a young guy. Look at how he's written it. He hears this a certain way, man.
Yeah.
You better deliver this. He's got 8,000 exclamation points. He has capitalized 50 words in this sentence.
Yeah.
He hears this a certain way had you read it, because what ends up happening is that somebody else, when we did group records, you guys, everybody else will have read it. And so we all know what your line is supposed to sound like, because it's not just my line.
Right.
I'm also reading Will's lines and Christy's lines, and
sure.
I'm knowing where my silence is. Where do I come in? Where do I fit in that joke, joke, bounce? Where do I fit? So that would be my last tid of bit.
That's a pro
anybody.
Tip.
Those are two important ones, because it's all about preparation. It's prepping your voice, and then it's prepping mm-hmm. your talent. I love that.
I know that. I love that you guys do that.
I love that.
I do.
I'm just
going
to get better if I ever get the opportunity to be on, you know, a long running series again. Then I would definitely be doing much more
you
of that preparation.
Prep.
I was so young when Kim Possible was that it was just the farthest thing from my mind. I was like, well, I'm the character's age, et cetera.
You're also in college.
I was in college. I was smoking. I was ruining my voice. And at the end, it was towards the end where my nodules really flared up, which is why, you know, Will, my voice did sound a bit different. And now I'm healed, and I just think that I would approach it so much more maturely.
Sure.
And I will say, that's the – Christy, what you just said – it's hugely important, because I will just tell you that, you know, we do what we do once we got the job. But I'll tell you, if you warm up and you read the script and you find your niche, that's also how you get the job.
Yeah.
I'm auditioning every day. And in my little mind, I am a goddess.
Of course. You have to be.
I audition like when we leave. I just took this off of my music. That's the audition I have for when we hang up.
Yeah.
And I'm warm, and I was like, but I've read it, and last night I sat and I marked it, and I was like, oh, that's a funny thing, because you'll see in the stage direction, run, 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 fall, hit, catch the ball anyway. So you want to put that stuff that's in the that's in the script in the prep for that line. Casting people love that, and I always say that's if you act and you prep like you were going to be on an on-camera series. That is how you stand out from the crowd when you audition with even against those of us who are vets.
I think that's a great place to leave it right there. Preparation, yeah, everybody.
Thank you.
Prep
yeah.
your voice and prep your age. Script. Those are very, very important. So, Candy, where can everybody find you if they're looking for you right now? What social media stuff do you have and what projects you have coming out?
I am at Candy Milo on TikTok, where I'm having a blast because it's so wrong.
It's so wrong.
The Candy Milo on Instagram. Come with me. And I am on Twitter at Candy Milo, and Candy is with an I. Please pre-order my book.
Yes.
I hope that you read
yes.
it. I hope that you
Sounds
like
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
And then I have a bunch of stuff with NDAs that I can't talk
of
about. But
course.
I have six animated series that I'm hoping will pop before January.
Wow.
Brand new
Woo,
ones.
Girl, you're
amazing. Amazing. Well, congratulations.
And thank you. What a
thank
delight
you, for joining
you two
us.
Are.
This
it
is
my
oh,
pleasure.
We love you.
For faking it. Yeah. But that's very sweet of you to come on anyway.
I'm going to hunt you down.
Hunt him down. Hunt him down. I know his address. I'll give it to you.
I love it. This is one of the warmest, friendliest programs that I've been on, and I think I feel that way because y'all did your homework.
Yay.
Oh, well, thank you.
We prepped. Preparation
we
is the key.
We love you.
It's not preparation H, but preparation is the key. Is the
preparation K. C. Yes.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me an opportunity.
Don't forget, everybody, yes. Surviving the Odd coming out on October 4th. And it's available for pre-order. And then she's also going to be signing at Barnes & Noble at The Grove, and that's on October 15th. So everybody
yes,
check
with
her
Yvette
out.
Nicole Brown.
Wow, yeah. Who's also a friend of the show. She was just on.
Yes. So. Stop it. Yeah, yes. I love her. She's going to moderate, and we're getting our show together now.
This is phenomenal. So everybody go check it out. It's going to be amazing. Thank you again
Thanks,
so
Jay.
Much for joining us. And
My
we'll
pleasure.
See you again. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, bye.
Bye.
Bye, Candy.
Wow. That was amazing, Christy. And a great way to end it, talking about
that
preparation.
That was a master class.
And,
yeah.
And everything that people are going to need. And that's going to be perfect for, what was the name of the contest again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
What was it called,
Christy? She's going to be.
I can't remember.
Really
what was it called?
Good mentor.
She
to
is.
Somebody.
For what, though? For what?
For the super bodacious, wonderful, fantastic, scrumptiously dubtious.
Not correct.
Most amazing contest
no.
to become.
Nope.
The next big voice 0% actor.
0% correct. It is a super awesome contest to become the next big voice actor. We will get into that later. But Candy Milo, thank you so much for joining us. That was amazing. Everybody have a great time. Enjoy yourselves. And thank you for joining us. And don't ever forget that if you think you've got what it takes to step up to the mic, then put your voices where your mouth is. Thanks, everybody. I Hear Voices is hosted by Will Friedle and Christy Carlson Romano. Executive produced by Will Friedle, Brendan Rooney, Amy Sugarman, and Vicky Ernst Chang. Our executive in charge of production is Danielle Romo. Our producer is Lorraine Virouez, and our editor/engineer is Brian Burton. And that was my announcer voice.
Some side effects of listening to I Hear Voices are sore abs from hilarity, falling down the Coco Melon rabbit hole, sneezing due to mass nostalgia, and hugs.
Follow I Hear Voices wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss any of the amazing voices.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at I Hear Voices Podcast. To see the video stream, subscribe to my YouTube channel.
You can also check us out on MySpace, Omegle, Vine, LimeWire, AAM, and Napster.
Okay, well, let's teach you about the internet.
The who?
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had.
Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.